AT&T Arena Saturday night. The Hurricanes dominated the Arizona Coyotes and then needed really a miracle goal from Dmitry Orlov just to take a 2-1 lead late. We've seen too much of that lately. We'll talk a little bit about that and other things with Luke Dukac of the News and Observer, who is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. I still, from the camera angle directly behind Orlov, I still can't figure out how that puck got past Connor Ingram. It was almost like it, like, apparated, to use a Harry Potterism, and ended up behind it. Maybe it took the Flu Network. I don't know. You have any theories?
I don't. And to be honest, I was busy dealing with the aftermath of NC State debacle in Syracuse when I was watching the game on a manager's phone in the hallway outside the locker room at 1-1. And by the time we were done talking to the players and Kevin Keats, I got back in the room at 3-1 and it was over. So I saw the replay like everybody else. I don't have any explanation. It's close encounters of the something kind. But all this time when we've talked about the Hurricanes not getting puck luck or not finishing chances or shooting percentages or blah, 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 this is the kind of goal that they haven't been getting. The one you can't explain, or the one that looks weird, or the one that's a soft goal. And I think if you know, obviously this is, we've said this about this team for 5 years now, but if that tide ever turns, it's going to be a juggernaut. And honestly, I think that the reality is the fact that they're in the position they're in with the goaltending they've gotten is actually a minor miracle in and of itself. But, you know, beyond that, I mean, I think it's a good time for the break. You take some momentum into it. They've played really well. Haven't always been rewarded,
right,
and figured out a way to do it with the goaltending they've gotten. I think that's actually pretty impressive.
Let's talk about the impact of the goaltending. I go back to the game in Ottawa, and this is before the holiday break, and it's been 21 games since that game in Ottawa. There have been, by my estimation, two bad goaltending performances. One against Nashville that saw Antti Raanta waived the next day, and one against the Islanders in Carolina, couldn't come back and lost 5-4. That was Kochetkov. But since the Ottawa game, they are 14-3-4, when for the most part they have gotten no worse than good goaltending. Doesn't that just illustrate the difference?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the numbers in terms of goals saved against expectations and all the advanced stats, the goaltending actually hasn't been that good, but it's been good enough, and that's really what matters in the NHL. Is if, you know, that's the problem the Oilers had at the start of the year. It's the problem that the Devils are still having. You know, you can overcome average goaltending. You can outscore average goaltending. You can outscore above average goaltending and win a bunch of games. The Hurricanes have. But you can't deal with bad goaltending. And obviously that's what was going on before the Ottawa game, the Islanders game that you mentioned in particular. But they figured out a way to do it. And I don't know that that's good enough. This tandem, as currently constituted,
right,
is good enough to win a Stanley Cup. But it's gotten them this far, and it hasn't ruined their season, which is a different situation than maybe the Devils are in. Obviously, they've probably had more top-end injuries than the Hurricanes. Dougie Hamilton and so on.
Yeah,
but
Jack Hughes,
their goaltending has been absolutely terrible. And the Oilers was absolutely terrible, and it's recovered a little bit, just like the Hurricanes. But, you know, I think Pierre Kochetkov showing the ability to sort of build a game and bounce back from where he was in December and play well when healthy has been good. And Antti Raanta hasn't been great every night, but he's been pretty good on some nights and good enough on the others with very few exceptions. But that's a change, too. So if you can get that, if your goaltending's not killing you, it opens up a world of possibilities. If your goaltending's killing you, there's not a whole lot you can do.
Yeah, and for all the people who want the Hurricanes to go out and get a goaltender, and we're talking with Luke Dukac of the News and Observer here, you got to go get a goalie. They have to go trade for a goalie. We don't know exactly what kind of goalie they need right now, and we won't be able to determine that until we can kind of get an idea for what Pyotr Kochetkov is going to show up after the All-Star break. Remember, last year for about 6 weeks, he was lights out, got hurt. By the time he got back into the lineup, he wasn't the same. I think they have to figure out what he is, because the goaltender who played from that Ottawa game until the injury against Anaheim, that was a goalie that they might not need another number one goalie. But we kind of have to wait and see, no?
Yeah, and I think what they've done more than that.
Uh-oh. I don't know. I don't hear him. Do you hear him? Did we lose me? I don't think we lost me. We didn't lose me. I'm here.
It looks
I'm
like here. He's still on, but maybe
right,
in a bad
we have
spot.
We have to figure out Luke Tkach here, who will be once again joining us on the Adam Gold Show in a second. And when we get back,
I'm right.
No, here
I'm
you
right
are. Here. You're
yeah,
back.
No, all right, fine. I'm back. Yeah, no, Freddie Anderson rises from the ashes. You know that would potentially change the equation too. But what they've done is they've bought themselves time. They've bought themselves time to assess where Piotr Kochetkov is in his career. They bought themselves time to assess whether Antti Raanta can be the backup. They bought themselves time for Freddie to work through his issues. So, time is money in the salary cap era. The longer you can wait before making a move, and quite frankly, when you look at the options that have been out there and some of the price tags attached to them, it really hasn't made sense. So, it's the longer you can, and they've done more than muddle through, but the longer you can muddle through and push off this decision of whether you decide you're going to have to do that. The more options you're going to have, the less it's going to cost you, the more salary cap space you're going to have, and potentially that's the more other things you could do at the deadline. But, I think that the book is still out on that, whether they need to or not. But I think they've done a really nice job sort of buying themselves time to figure that out.
All right. So, Luke Tkach, final thing on the Hurricanes as we head into the All-Star break here, and then we'll talk about Wolfpack on the other side. We'll have just a minute or so here. One thing you believe that they have to go out and get?
I don't know if they have to go out and get anything the way they've played. I think the thing that would help them most, assuming the goaltending holds up, is one more centerman. Because as good of a start as Jesperi Kotkaniemi had, as well as Jack Drury has played lately, I think when you get into a playoff series and you're dealing with matchups and things like that, I think they could use one more body down the middle that's a legit NHL top 6-9 centerman.
So, it didn't sound to me like you were describing Elias Lindholm. I always say, what do they need? And I do the best I can to describe. I always say they need a right-handed centerman who can play in all situations and used to play here from Sweden. That's how I do it.
That would be great. But I don't know that that's realistic to expect that given the contract situation and all that. And I don't know that it makes the most sense for Elias Lindholm, quite frankly. He's going to want to pick his spots. He's probably not going to be a star here on this team. He might next year, but the opportunities here may not be as great. He would be coming here to add to a team, not to carry a team himself.
I understand. I still want to describe it as Elias Lindholm. It's my fantasy. Let me have that much. All right, to the Wolfpack. I talked about them earlier. Half-court offense and half-court defense has just been woeful. They didn't build on the win over Wake Forest, especially the way they played in the second half in that game. And it's getting late early to coin a Yogi Berra-ism for the Wolfpack. They have to figure out a way to get some wins. They have to distinguish themselves from the rest of the middle of the ACC. What are you seeing from them?
Yeah, they just lost their way. The question after the Syracuse game for me was, not so much is it season-saving time, but is it too late? I don't think it is with 11 games to go in the ACC and some big games ahead. But they got to figure things out. They got to get back to the way they were playing early in the ACC schedule when they weren't turning the ball over, when they were guarding people, when they weren't falling for the same Benny Williams baseline cut 17 times in the same game, and when they were, quite frankly, making shots. You know, Sidney Lowe got to make shots. You're just not going to win many games scoring 15, 22 points in the first half. When you make 6 field goals, the math just doesn't work. So they've got to figure out a way that, and I don't think it's here because I don't think it was necessarily bad shots the way it was like at Notre Dame where they took a million long 2-point jumpers. They got to make shots, and then they got to play defense when their shots aren't falling so they don't fall behind by 18 points like they did at Syracuse, let the crowd get into the game, and then it was an uphill battle. And as Kevin Keefe said afterwards, like, look, I'm tired of coming in here and complimenting them for their fight. We got to start winning games, not patting ourselves on the back for coming back in almost.
Yeah, the fight at Virginia was admirable, right? But they ended up losing the game in overtime anyway. But getting off to such bad starts is just killing them. And, you know, in some ways, I go back to the game at North Carolina, which not at, but at against North Carolina at PNC Arena, which in some ways was cold water, was like the ice water in the face. Because I thought, especially the way the early part of the game, they weren't playing their game, but they were right there. And I felt like in the second half, there was an opportunity for them to take that game. And they just rushed everything. They played poor. I actually thought their half-court defense was good in that game until it got away from them. But they rushed everything offensively. They couldn't finish off possessions on the defensive glass. I thought that in some ways really hurt them.
Yeah, the flip side to that is until the last few 5 to 7 minutes, whatever it was, they kept up with North Carolina. You know, they kept it, you know, North Carolina would start to pull away a little bit. They would pull them back. So, and then, you know, we've seen what North Carolina has done to other teams this year. I don't think there's any doubt what we're looking at with North Carolina. So I actually thought until the Wolfpack sort of wilted and late, and I really thought that had more to do with, honestly, with UNC being a better team, quite frankly. I mean, I think they just sort of got outplayed at the end because UNC is deeper and stronger and has more guys who can do more things. But I thought the cold water performance, if anything, was the absolute no-show at home against Virginia Tech. The slow start wasn't a problem. They just got beat at home. And I think that shook their confidence a little bit. I think it shook their confidence at Virginia, and they should have come out of the Virginia game with it rebuilt the way they forced overtime. And instead, they went into Syracuse and played what was probably their worst game of the year. So there's some confidence rebuilding. You know, DJ Burns has not been good.
No.
They maintain he's not injured, despite the fact he never sits on the bench and didn't start at Syracuse. But they got DJ Horn's got to make shots. Jaden Taylor's got to make shots. Casey Morsell's got to make shots. And they got to find a way to get DJ Burns back to at least threatening to score 20 points because, you know, 10 and 7 is just, they're not built to win with DJ Burns putting up those kinds of numbers. North Carolina can win if Armando Bacot has 9 and 6. They're going to be, they're fine. They don't need him to score 35 points every night. NC State needs more out of DJ Burns. Some of it is teams have figured out how to stop him. And some of it, I think, is his decision making hasn't been good this year. He's got to get back to doing what he does best.
I actually think I'm not sure he's a net positive to them because I think he hurts their defense. And I mean, I love DJ Burns, but I think he's more of a designated hitter than he is somebody who can be a 30-minute player in the ACC. Especially, I kind of like Middlebrooks and Diarra. I think you can play them together. But I mean, I don't know. They have to get their half court offense and defense playing a whole lot better. Otherwise, again, it's getting late early. Luke DeCock of the News and Observer. I appreciate your time, my friend, at Luke DeCock on Twitter. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, AJ. See you soon.
You got it.